Well, I no longer have to sing shitty version of the intro because I figured out how to do that, do the song intro. So like our last episode that we did last night, I think I used Mr. Brownstone or no, I used Civil War.
I think. as long as it was Guns N' Roses song.
Yeah.
That's all in it. Or Sean Hannity's crappy intro song.
Yeah, Sean Hannity, I like him, but he has got terrible, terrible taste in music. He's got like that, it's like the new country that's like even shittier than pop music. I'd rather listen to CNC Music Factory any day of the week than like the Florida Georgia Line, which I don't even really know who they are. I've never really listened to that music beyond the sort of the basic crap. So, but yeah, if you're not familiar with why we're harping a little bit on old Axel, it has to do with the fact that he got upset that Trump was using his songs at some of the rallies. There is, you know, there's like a fair use if you only use so much of a song. I know it applies to radio. I don't know. I think it's a loophole that he's. So these different musicians are getting pissed that Trump is using their songs at his rallies, but I don't think he's doing it like illegally. And you know, to a certain extent, it's like, you know, Axl Rose stole all the rights from his own bandmates. So who gives a shit what he thinks about somebody misusing? You know, misusing your music. And I mean, something that after Obama was elected, he used At Last. I think that's Etta James. I think that's Etta James. I may be wrong there. I'd be embarrassed if I am. But she said that she did not give anybody permission for that song to be used for that purpose. You know, so it's a fun thing. I don't even want to get into that. That's something I think as Republicans, I think that's something we've got to stop doing because we're driving ourselves crazy with it. Even though it's obvious and it's easy picking, we're going to have to stop saying, well, if that was Obama, they would be kissing. You know, it's like, yes, of course. They're biased. They're sycophants. We can't argue with them anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you know somebody's crazy and unreliable, then there's just a point that you don't fuck with that person anymore. You stop dealing with them. You don't talk to them or take advice for them or whatever. You deal with them in as least ways possible. And that's what we have to do with CNN and MSNBC and a lot of these journalists is just as best you can ignore it. That's what I think bothers me about what like Fox News does it and all, obviously CNN and all of the major ABC, they take a stupid thing that somebody said and they amplify it. And it's like Fox News does it and Breitbart does it a lot and all of them do it. It's not just a conservative or a liberal, it's a media thing. And part of it is they're just trying to get clicks, but it just keeps you wound up, you know, all the time because they're like, well, Demi Lovato said that, you know, Trump is a racist asshole. It's like, who cares? Why did Fox News waste their time, you know, telling me what Tom Arnold said about Trump one night when he was, you know, because it's like, oh, I think we've talked about this before with celebrities, but who fucking cares? But it's like I get up and I want to read legitimate news, and it's maybe 10-15% important, you know, national and worldwide and sort of local news. Local news is actually the closest that you'll get too fact-based. There's plenty of bias, but local news, a lot of times, they're just, you know, they're not trying to put a whole lot of spin on the little puff pieces that they go out and do in the community. So you get actual news. But last night when we were talking and kind of the fatigue of the day, and I thought, you know, I may just take a break from this. I may just, there's a lot of people that I think are going to tune out politically, but I was thinking about it. And, you know, honestly, in a lot of ways, we have to realize that what Trump wants to do, even if he goes for 8 years, which I think he will, but even if he goes for 8 years, it's not going to get finished with him. And it doesn't, there's only so long that Trump is going to be able to be what he is. He's a wartime guy. We needed a street fighter. We needed somebody to punch back. Here he is. He's Johnny on the spot with that. But the real fight's with us. And so, you know, although it would be, you know, it's a different kind of, like, obviously Donald Trump gets up every day, and when he wants to make a decision or when he wants to voice his opinion, the world listens. When Glenn Keck wakes up in the morning, very few people give a shit. Not even most of the people that I live with here in this house, my family, care about my political opinion. So there's a difference. But what I'm saying is that the American people, we cannot, we wanted to drain the swamp. We wanted to put this man in there to fight. And now we cannot get battle weary. We've got to toughen up. And I think part of it starts with not getting so wrapped up in the hypocrisy of the left, not getting wrapped up in the crap that they call us, and not getting on Twitter and Facebook and having stupid arguments with people. I think it's important that, honestly, if we want to be successful as a movement throughout the nation, it's going to have to be grassroots, and it's going to have to be people that get off of their computers and their phones and go out and try to get boots on the ground, organize, you know, talk, assemble while we still can. You know, people, you have to understand that to a certain extent, anything you do online is going to be tracked, but it's also going to be pretty worthless. You know what I'm saying? It's like Facebook groups are, they're meaningless. No matter how many people are in them. And if you want to affect a change in our country, if you want to be a part of a movement, you have to start where you live. And so the media in some aspects is just trying to wear, you know, I keep thinking they're going to get worn out. And I think that to a certain extent, fatigue has set in and insanity. And this is kind of all tying into why we're doing a back-to-back podcast, because a lot of stuff has happened today where I think that parts of the media have just lost their mind. But what drives me crazy personally is dealing with the hypocrisy, the projection that these people are the, you know, Don Lemon is a racist bigot, and he spends all of his time projecting the fault, you know, the traits of himself onto his enemies. And, you know, it really comes down to the fact that he's created a boogeyman based on his own image, and then he wants to project that onto Donald Trump and use him as a punching bag all day. It's, you know, it's not just a straw man. It's a straw man in his image. And so, you know, it's that, and it's the hypocrisy of people who are sycophants for Obama and, you know, would have bent over and kissed their own ass if Obama had told them to, that are downright rude and disrespectful to the office of the presidency. And there's this sense of entitlement that goes along with it of like, well, I don't have to, I'm a journalist and I'm not biased, but I don't respect you and I don't like you, you know, it could drive you crazy. And I think that's where a lot of my fatigue comes from. So I think to stay in this, it has to start being that whenever I hear somebody on MSNBC say something really dumb and not hurtful, but damage, you know, something that could cause damage, which a lot of things they say are meant to get people riled up. But just let it roll off my back and say, who cares? Who cares what, you know, that guy thinks. But what we're here to talk about is a few things that have happened today. And I think they tie into some of the different stuff with the midterms. Obviously, I think that Trump is, everybody talks about Trump playing the 4D chess. I think that he probably had a pretty good idea how things were going to turn out last night. I think that he, you know, was waiting to see. And so Jeff Sessions has been sent packing. And it's really kind of a tragic story because Sessions was a valuable senator from Alabama. He was one of the, you know, the lot that had been around for a long time. He was the first senator to really come out and endorse and start stumping for Trump. And Trump rewarded him by making him the attorney general. And of all the mistakes that Trump has made, because I think Trump being a political outsider, there was a trial and error. And this is a business concept, so I don't fault him for it. But of all the mistakes that Trump has made, finding his way, making Jeff Sessions the attorney general has been catastrophic. Arguably some of the worst parts of the media and the DNC's attack and the misinformation on Trump. It really starts with the fact that Jeff Sessions has been absent, weak. It's really a shame because, you know, he seemed like he was going to come in and we thought we were going to get some investigations into Hillary. We thought we were going to get some investigations into the FBI. And what we got out of the DOJ was just stonewalling. It was pretty appalling, I think, that he just didn't do anything. He recused himself for something he knew. I think that Jeff Sessions was like Rush was talking about today, how and I want to get your reaction, Maggie Dave, but Rush was talking today about how there were these Republicans who retired because they bought into the talk of the blue wave, and they thought that everybody hated Trump and he was just going to get killed, and so they decided to retire. And they come to find out that wasn't the reality. There was like something like 45 incumbent Republicans retired. And, you know, but turns out, and I think that, and what I'm making that point is that I think that Jeff Sessions was somebody that supported Trump. But when he got into the DOJ, I think he listened to a lot of these bureaucrats that made it seem like Trump had actually done something wrong. So I think that Sessions was really afraid to interject himself because I think he felt like he was going to stick his neck out for Trump and that it was going to end very poorly. So instead of acting strongly like an attorney general, you know, I don't know if that's how they should, but I know they're part of the cabinet. It's an important post, and he didn't. So what's What's your reaction, Magaday, to the news today that Jeff Sessions, Trump asked him to resign, and he obliged?
It's about time. I mean, I know somewhere Thomas Wichter is shedding a tear, him and his Twitter followers. Somewhere, you know, for what the short period of time I was on Twitter, that dude just, you just wait. He's working on something behind the scenes. Anyway, but no, I was glad to see him go. He's not cut out for what we need right now. You know, we need a guy that's like Trump in that he will not back down. He will go out and basically take it to these people. You know, right. And as far as those Republicans retiring or whatever, I just look at that as part of draining the swamp in a way. You know,
sure.
Those are the guys that are, you know, spineless anyway. I mean, they're not going to do us any good in the long run anyway. So get the hell out, go home.
Right.
I mean, and I know we lost the House. You know, a big reason is because of that. But I mean, you. Like Rush says all the time, this whole thing, this whole process was never going to be pretty or go perfect. Or, you know, it's a back and forth thing. And just like you said earlier, it's not going to, it doesn't need to end with Trump. You know, it will take a long, long time to change things for the better. So I hope somebody similar to Trump is after him. Somebody that at least, you know, somebody that has a backbone and isn't afraid to challenge these people.
Well, and there, you know, we're going to get to a point where, you know, we're going to get to a point to where there is major civil unrest in this country where, you know, there's basically the civil war people have been talking about, or, you know, we're going to start toning down some of the rhetoric. But honestly, if you look at it, and I know I'm biased, but I don't see the rhetoric that Republicans, I don't see what rhetoric Republicans need to tone down. Most of the time, it's just sort of Republicans calling out Democrats for being, you know, you just, because we're not calling them racist. We're not calling them bigots, even though they are. They are the party of racists and bigots. They always have been. They always will be. That no matter what color they are, what color of their skin, you know. Now you have African Americans who feel like they have some sort of justification in being racist, and this is the same kind of thinking of the Jim Crow era. Those white men. And women back then felt very justified. They felt like Negroes were ignorant, that they were inherently evil, that they needed to, you know, that they were inferior. They had all these, they felt like it was a scientific, you know, scientists had said they were just, their brains were smaller, they were stupider, you know, all this ridiculous stuff. But they felt quite justified, like they were doing the right thing. And if you talk to, you know, Van Jones or Don Lemon or Michael Dyson, I mean, they feel like there is some justification for the racism and the bigotry that they spout on a daily basis. They feel like they're, you know, that it is backed in some sort of intellectual foundation, and it's the same thing. It's racism and it's bigotry, and that they're going to have to get off the entitlement, you know, victimization, calling everybody that you don't agree with all the worst things you can think of. You know, that's going to have to tone down before we can ever sit down at a table and talk. You know, it doesn't look like it's going to happen that way anytime soon. So what we have is a wartime general in Trump who is, he's just going to keep punching. He's just going to keep hitting them, and he's revealing them. They can't help themselves. But let's talk about this a little bit. I got kind of off on left field, but let's kind of break this down. So one of the things that I think we were both a little bit initially curious about is in Jeff Sessions' absence, Rod Rosenstein has been the one that has handled the Russia probe since Sessions accused him. Since Sessions recused himself. Rod Rosenstein, who, you know, anybody that knows anything knows that he should not be anywhere near the Russia investigation. Jeff Sessions had no reason to recuse himself. I think that he was just listening to the, you know, the DOJ has an ethics, ethics department. And I think that he listened to them and took their advice. I don't think that it was, you know, malicious or anything like that. But Rod Rosenstein actually did have something to do with all of this. You know, he recommended that Trump fire Comey. And then, you know, he basically turned around and plotted to investigate Trump for firing Comey. So this guy's got his hands dirty. So I think when this initially happened, it was like, okay, well, Trump knows now that he has the majority in the Senate. So he knows that if he wants to the next attorney general that he wants to nominate, that he's got his pick. Because for, you know, the Senate is going to approve them. They can't, the Democrats can't stop them anymore. They can't, and you know, Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and these people playing politics isn't going to matter anymore because they don't have the numbers. They don't have Corker and McCain and Flake. They've got, you know, people that owe their spot to Trump. And I'm really hoping that Martha McSally holds out in Arizona. That's really, I think, going to be an important, important race out there. But so you're going to have a 3-4 seat margin in the Senate. So Trump knows that the next attorney general he nominates is going to get put through. So, but it, he's not going to be able to do that till after January. So it's, you know, he obviously has a plan that as soon as the day after the election, he fires Jeff Sessions. He was obviously waiting for the right moment to do it. Ask Sessions for the resignation. He gets it. But it's not Rosenstein that's going to take over. It's a guy named Whitaker. Who I guess was Sessions' second in command. So he's going to be the interim attorney general in the absence. And the first thing that the Democrats are, you know, they're whining, complaining about the Russia probe. I'm going to give a little theory I have, and then I want to hear what you have to say about it. But I wonder if this whole thing with Rosenstein, where he supposedly was wanting to wiretap the president and all this stuff. And it during the Kavanaugh hearings, Trump and he met on Air Force One. And, you know, he made all these assurances. I think he's a worm. I think he's a guy who'll do and say anything to save his career. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rosenstein told Trump, hey, look, because if anybody knows what Mueller has, it's Rod Rosenstein. He may be the only person who knows what Mueller has. But I think that there's a possibility that Rosenstein came to Trump and said, look, Mueller hasn't found anything. He's, you know, he's not going to have anything of substance. He's going to take some other people, maybe cause trouble for them. But it's not going to be any problem for you. And so Trump knows that he can't be hurt by anything in reality with the Russia probe. I think first off, he just knows that he didn't do anything wrong. But second off, he knows already that Mueller's not going to have anything. And so what he's doing right now is he's posturing, basically creating a defensive position where if the Democrats want to start investigating, you know, all these random bullshit, you know, Russia and Trump's finances, whatever, Trump's going to get an attorney general that will use the DOJ in the same way, just start opening investigation after. You know, he still hasn't released the FISA. And so I think that this is what Trump is basically saying. Okay, you think that you're going to come in and try to impeach me and just have endless investigations. Well, you can't do anything to anybody without the Department of Justice. And so I'm going to get the Department of Justice cleaned out, locked down, and we're going to be able to open actual meaningful investigations where people, you know, can actually go to jail and not just be charged with contempt of Congress. So that's my theory about what's maybe is going on is that, but the timing is curious. I don't know if he's just wanting to send a message or if he just wanted to get rid of Sessions the moment that he knew he could. You know, what's your impression of the timing of how this is working out?
Yeah, I think it's probably a little of all those things. I mean, I think he's got a plan, sort of. I think he has options. I think a business guy like him, you know, I think he's thought this out. He's got ammo as far as the FISA and who knows what else. And he's making calculated decisions, you know, just like today when he had that press conference, you know, and he was talking about how he's, you know, he's willing to work with the Democrats and all that stuff. And, you know, saying all the quote unquote right things or whatever, you know, but he's doing these things. He's ahead of these people. He's figured them out. You know, he's been in long enough to figure out what's going on. And I think he has some information. And, you know, the Rosenstein thing, I think he is a snake in the grass too. And, you know, like I've told you several times, I just wonder when some of these people are going to start turning on each other and to save their ass, you know, and that's what this is with the Rosenstein thing. I don't know.
All right.
It'd be interesting to see this. It'll be interesting to see who he puts in as AG. That's a big, big deal.
Right. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. Some of this stuff, I think what you mentioned earlier too, about part of the people that are retiring is cleaning out the swamp. That was one of the things that Trump said today was he basically took credit for Jeff Flake.
Oh yeah, said, that was funny. That was basically hilarious. Basically
said, you can thank me for that. You know, that guy's a beauty. Yeah, I know why he retired. I'm the reason why he retired. I got rid of him for you. You're welcome. You know, he knows how to hit their buttons. And so that's the Sessions thing happened. But before that, and you've probably seen, so I know you don't need the play-by-play about the whole Acosta thing. He does this. He's not a journalist. He's a grandstanding protester. He gets up and tries to make statements in the form of a question. He gets up and he's combative. He's a smartass. He says, you know, he gets up and tries to say the most disrespectful shit. He has no respect for the presidency. And I don't think that you should be covering the president if you don't have respect for at least the office. You may not like the person in the office, but you respect the office. You know, and that stuff's been blown out the window. But don't think that what goes around doesn't come around. But Jim Acosta, again, tried to make everything about him, and the White House has revoked his press credentials. I think it was a long time coming. I think that the blowback from it's going to be brief. I just don't see why they let him back. He doesn't want to follow the rules. It's just about grandstanding. It's just about him. You know, he's rude to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and most of what he does, he doesn't try to report the news. He just tries to make the news about him. He's just trying to create news. I think he's just the worst. You know, I think he's probably, if you could see behind the scenes, it's probably like if like the Anchorman was real and just like it wasn't funny. You know, I think that's Jim Acosta, he's just got all the ego and none of the clever wittiness. Do you think they ought to ever let him back on the White House grounds?
I mean, personally, I wouldn't mind seeing it just because he's hilarious. Like he just cracks me up. It's like I don't know how to explain Jim Acosta. You know, it's like, it's so hilarious and sad and degrading and telling, and there's so many things that it exemplifies. But at the, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, if I never see Jim Acosta ask another question or hear anything ever about him again, you know, my life will be all right. I mean, right, the guy. Well, the guy's just he really is a parody, man. I mean, he's what a good Saturday Night Live skit would be, is just this reporter who just is so outlandish and just so, like, you know, he whines all the time. You know, it really is like a skit out, happening in real life.
He thinks he's like as brave as soldiers.
Yeah. Yeah, like it really
he talks
is
about
like
his life being in danger. You know, I mean, the guy's he's somebody who makes my blood boil because he's so sanctimonious and he's so full of shit. You know, it's one thing if he just kind of owned it and said, "Yeah, you know what? I'm just going to fuck with the president. I'm just going to kind of be a douchebag." And, you know, that's going to be my shtick. That's one thing. That might even be kind of funny. You know, I don't think I'd have any respect for him. But, you know, somebody who you know, he is what he is. But he wants to have it both ways. And the fact that he's so sanctimonious when he doesn't get his way, you know, he treats people like dog shit. And then whenever he gets put in his place, you know, he just crawls up on that little cross of his, and it's all part of that thing that I'm going to try to get over, the hypocrisy, the parts of the Democrats that are hypocrites, two-faced, projecting all of their, you know, negative qualities onto other people. If you asked Jim Acosta what he thought his job was, I would be interested to hear that. But I do think that for decades to come, they will use him as an example of how not to act if you're a journalist. You know, don't make it about you. Don't grandstand in a White House press briefing. I mean, it really is sickening stuff. And it's stuff that the press would not, again, they would not tolerate it. If Obama was the president and a conservative, I'm doing what I said I didn't want to do, but that's, you know, that's the hard part. If it were the other way around, then people would be losing their minds and they would be calling for him to never work in another press room again. So, you know, I hope they don't ever give him back. I hope he loses his his press credentials. And then, you know, in six more years, whenever there's a different president, he can get his credentials back. And by then, you know, nobody's going to give a shit. His little shtick will be done because, you know, he's going to just be a sycophant for the next Democrat that's in office. It just really boggles the mind. It's hard to talk about rationally because it's a really irrational subject. So that's a couple things that happened today that were big. Sessions fired, Jim Acosta's press credentials jerked. We know that Jeff Flake is retiring. There's a lot of good things happening that, you know, if you're going to clean out the swamp, you got to start somewhere. And Trump is having to start in his own party. But I think that this is something that I think we touched on a little bit last night. But I know multiple people have said it. James Woods made the observation, you know, Ben Shapiro, different people have all said that really losing the House works best for Trump. James Woods went so far as to say that Trump would lose in 2020 had the Republicans maintained everything. And what Ben Shapiro was saying was that a lot of what is on President Trump's agenda has already happened. And there still are some things like the wall, like getting rid of Obamacare. There's still plenty on the docket. But the president has sort of overaccomplished for his first couple years. So if things slow down to a grind over the next couple years leading into the 2020 presidential election, Trump will be able to basically use Nancy Pelosi as a punching bag and just talk about how much he was able to accomplish without, you know, before the Democrats, and, you know, how much is how little is getting done with them in office. it's interesting because Trump has actually gotten a lot done in his first 2 years. If you compare that with Obama, there was so much that Obama promised that he didn't do in the first 2 years whenever he had to. Because, you know, Obama had the majority, same as Trump, when he was elected. He had Senate and House of Representatives. And there were a lot of issues, immigration that he could have fixed, a lot of things that Obama promised he was going to do that he didn't even try to do when he had the opportunity. And then he began losing, you know, he has the he is the highest turnover from any president in his first midterm. Trump, I think, lost something like, what was it, 34 seats or something like that, 20, maybe 26 or something. I want to say 26, but I'm not exactly sure. But Trump is actually, I think, the lowest, has lost the least seats in the midterm. And Obama has the most with like 63. And it started a trend where Obama, every cycle after he was elected, he lost stunning amounts. People rejected Obama's policy throughout his presidency, and they lost like 1,200 seats all over the country. So, yeah. Trump is at a higher popularity at this point in his presidency than Obama. He's lost fewer seats at this in his first midterm. He's accomplished a lot that he. I mean, by all metrics, we have not had a president accomplish what Trump has accomplished. I mean, I guess maybe since Reagan, but I'd be curious to see where his approval rating was, because he was not well liked his first term of presidency. He had to sort of win over Americans and with prosperity, and he did. And but if you look at Trump, again, at the same time in his presidency, his approval rating is higher. I don't know if people out there that are listening, do you get what a monumental, you know, having his popularity at an all-time high right now, higher than Obama's, you know, it's not just like it's an even race and Trump is winning. It's like Obama is being, you know, he's racing with the best shoes on, and he's running downhill, and the media are giving him Gatorades every, you know, quarter mile, and Trump is having to carry cinder blocks, you know, and he's running in boots that are too big for him. Because if you look at, now the popularity obviously is a measure of the public, obviously, but Obama had the world kissing his ass. You know, we're talking about at 2010. So people are so afraid to be called racist that even Republicans who disagree with him are afraid to attack him. So you have, you know, the United States, both parties, everybody is kissing Obama's ass, and his public approval is lower than Trump's, where Trump is attacked by the media, not just daily, but hourly. They have tried to take him out for 2 years every single day. They've tried to. They've not taken a day off from trying to remove him as president. And his approval rating is at an all-time high, and it's higher than Obama's. So, you know, it's not all things being even. It's that Trump has accomplished this in amazing fashion. So I think that's worth noting. It's not even close. You know, so we're but what, there's still a few races out there. You have Brian Kemp in Georgia. It looks like he's going to win, but his challenger, Stacey Abrams, I think her name is. She is your typical kind of victim, entitled victim. And so she is not going to concede, even though it seems like she's pretty well behind. She wants to make sure every vote is counted. I think she's maybe trying to get a hold of Al Franken and see if he's got one of them cars with full of votes for just her. But there's that one, and then there's the McSally Cinema, and man, it's disappointing that that race was so close. The cinema lady, the Democrat, I mean, she just said all kinds of terrible stuff about housewives. She disparaged the military. She talked trash about Arizona, and these people still, on a border state that has to deal with the actual effects of illegal immigration and the cartels and all that in Arizona, and they still decide to fuck around and possibly elect this Democrat. It's just, I don't know. I think it's fucked up. But I almost kind of can see what Kristen Sinema means by Arizona being the meth lab of democracy, because if you're dumb enough to elect this lady, then you deserve what you're going to get. I mean, you know, this is also coming from the state that their two senators were John McCain and Jeff Flake. So, I mean, I get that the bar is, like, the, so low.
The dynamic duo.
You had the opportunity to elect, the first woman, JAG pilot, somebody who has served with distinguished, has all kinds of achievements, versus somebody who has been a worthless, entitled victim, protester who has just not ever held back. She has no discretion, and she has said, she says whatever she wants to say, denigrating the people that she wants to represent. And these fucking idiots want to elect her. So fine, whatever. People want to make fun of Arkansas all the time. You know, you always get the hillbilly and the references, whatever. We got our shit on lockdown. You know, you people want to talk trash about Arkansas, yeah, sure, we gave you the Clintons. Sorry about that. We've also given you Tom Cotton. We've also given you Sarah Sanders Huckabee, fucking Mike Huckabee. We've brought a lot to the political spectrum, and we keep it red here. We are, we didn't let any of our House seats fall to Democrats. We don't send Democrats to the Senate. We elect Republican governors, and the people that are politicians here in Arkansas are very meaningful in the public realm. So I'd take what Arkansas is giving the country over the bullshit that Arizona is churning out right now. But to all you patriots that did vote for Martha McSally, Martha McSally in Arizona, you're doing everything you can. I wonder what's going on there. I wonder how many, I wonder if I haven't heard that there was, but I wonder if there's any problem with illegal aliens voting in Arizona. It's the perfect, perfect place. And there's, I think that's where Sicario, that's where are they in Arizona? Arizona or Texas? They're in the beginning where the house blows up with all the people are in the walls. That's a pretty good movie. Pretty good movie. Well, Dave, do you have any other thoughts? I know I've kind of ranted a little bit, just trying to kind of put everything into perspective for what's going on. I think we're going to find out more as time goes on about what Trump's plan here. I think he's going to sort of, over the next few months, he'll reveal to us what his intentions are and how this whole attorney general thing is going to work out. But I think in a larger sense, it's going to be to block a lot of the stuff that the Democrats are going to try to do in the House with the meaningless investigations. But do you have any final thoughts?
No, man, not really. I mean, we're just going to have to see how it all kind of plays out. For now, I trust Trump to do. He hasn't really let me down at all. So I have faith that he knows what he's doing. He knows what he has on him, what he can do and what he can't do. And I just think it'll be a very interesting next 2 years. That's really about all I got, man.
Who are your top three attorney generals? And if you don't have three, then just, top two or whatever, but who would be, if you could, knowing what you know that they have to be, as much as I think we were talking about this earlier, but as much as I like Trey Gowdy, he's not the kind of guy who's going to sell out to run in interference for Trump. He's not going to do what Eric Holder did for Obama and be his wingman. So knowing what Trump needs, who is in your top three of people that you think that Trump should consider to come in and be the top lawman in the nation?
Yeah, I think Probably Giuliani's probably up there. Man, I don't know. To be honest, we just need someone that acts like Trey Gowdy, I guess, would be a great thing.
Right.
To act like he did when he was in Congress on the Oversight Committee. We need somebody like that. It'd be awesome. But I don't think we're going to get somebody like that. But if they'll just start going after prosecuting and getting things done and dealing with these people in a prosecutorial way instead of just letting the things go on there, you know?
Right.
Want to see some change. You know, I read a thing where this guy that's an interim AG as of right now has said some different things. Not, this was before he was interim AG, but he had said some, like, if he was the AG, he would just, you know, cut off the funding or make it real low. And, you know, they've had 2 years basically. So if you hadn't found anything in 2 years, what are you really going to find, you know?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you three names, and one of them I'll give you kind of a roundabout scenario. And I think that only one of these is actually a possibility. But this is sort of my dream scenario, okay? Now, what I think is the likeliest. Now, I'm not saying this is going to happen because I don't think that anybody can predict what Trump is going to do when it comes to this type of stuff. But the one I think is probably the most likely is Rudy Giuliani. He's already a part of Trump's legal team. He's obviously was a very successful prosecutor. He's obviously still got the political savvy. He's also somebody who is like Trump. He's unafraid. He's unabashedly a supporter. I think he would run interference. I think he would open the right investigations. I think he would be very zealous for what he would need to do. So I think that that's a possibility. Of the three that I'm going to mention, I think he is the realest possibility. But I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't end up. Now, my second, then this is really my dream, AG, would be Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. I think if you put Tom Fitton in as the Attorney General, you would get some shit done. And also, if it ever came down to like an arm wrestling or a fist fight, he would be able to win on either brains or brawn. I don't know if you've seen any pictures of Tom Fitton lately, but he's pretty freaking buff. Are you familiar with him? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Yeah. His shirts are tight on him, and it's not because he buys them too small. It's because that's just how it is. You know, the dude's jacked.
There's only so much material that can fit around a human being.
Yeah.
Tom Fitton would be probably my dream scenario for Attorney General, because I think that he would, you know, there's so many people that would look at that as a biased move, but if you want somebody to go in and root out corruption, oh, good Lord, if you could just release Tom Fitton on the the DC swamp, there'd be hell to pay. There would be hell to pay. But I also think that even though the Republicans have the Senate majority, I think Fitton might be hard to get through. But here's a third scenario, and this, I think, is a very – I don't think this is rooted in any reality. I don't think this is going to happen. But I think it's an interesting scenario to think about, okay? Let's say that Lindsey Graham has gotten this boost of popularity from Kavanaugh. He's grown a set of balls now that John McCain's kicked the bucket. and that he plans on trying to eventually run for president after after Trump gets out of office, that his ultimate plan is to run for president in 2024. And so Trump nominates Lindsey Graham as the attorney general, and he serves for the remainder of the 2 years, and then possibly takes another cabinet position in Trump's administration in 2020, depending on how that works out. And then after 2024, he is one of the Republicans that runs for president. Now, I don't think that's necessarily realistic, but I do think it would be interesting. My only apprehension is that, you know, Lindsey Graham 2.0 is awesome, but there's a big, huge, long track record of Lindsey Graham being not so awesome. So I don't know how, you know, I don't know how Rudy Giuliani, there's no love lost between him and, you know, anybody in the Senate. But Lindsey Graham is one of these people who, you know, they all talk about how they're all, you know, it's the, sometimes watching the Senate is like watching a bunch of fourth graders, because they have to say, now my friend over there, that he's my friend and he's a good, we've been friends for a long time. My friend, the distinguished gentleman from yada, yada, yada. It's like, okay, buddy, yeah. When you guys have to say that you're friends all the time, maybe you're probably not the best of friends at the end of the day. But, you know, I don't think that either. Honestly, if I had to put money on it, I would say that Trump is going to surprise us. And it's not. And those three that I picked are not even anywhere near close to the reality. But I do think he needs somebody who's going to go in there and root out corruption, and it needs to be a Tom Fitton character, that kind of, you know, hard-nosed, big-pecked, somebody who is not going to compromise, you know, in any way. So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, one of the things that Trump has done now is he has seized the news cycle. And anytime he wants to, he can just talk a little bit about the attorney general. And he's already got Democrats like Jerry Nadler, who thinks he's going to be real important. He's already got him worked in a tizzy. And the problem that the Democrats are going to find out is a lot of the stuff they're pissed about is constitutional right. And if they want to take it to the highest court of the land, I think Trump would probably be okay with that. You know, there's only so much they're going to be able to do. And if Trump positions himself with the right people playing defense, yeah. And I want people to realize that the only reason really that Trump doesn't have anything to worry about, it doesn't matter, you know, at the end of the day, who he puts in, if he's guilty, but he's not guilty. They have dug around in his life in a way that no other politician could survive. If Maxine Waters had the kind of scrutiny put on her that Trump has had, she would be in jail, you know, right now. They have given Trump a thorough trying to find anything. And for as long as he's been like a famous businessman, he's obviously, you know, above board on a lot of things because they haven't found anything. I think that's going to be interesting, but we went a little bit longer than I was planning on. But I, you know, this stuff is ongoing, and we just wanted to react. We're going to probably get settled into where we're maybe just doing the podcast once a week, sometimes twice a week if it's a heavy news week. But anyway, well, it'll be interesting to see how it goes along, and we'll keep you updated with a lot of pointless information and a lot of stats that are kind of guessed and a lot of half facts that are just based off memory. But that's the kind of...
We're going to use the CNN model.
Yeah, right. That's, you know, you can go... If you want to get hard facts, there's a lot of places you could go. But here you're going to get soft facts with a heavy opinion. And, yeah, it's like CNN, only we don't take ourselves seriously. And that makes the difference. That makes all the difference in the world. You know, we're like the Norm McDonald's of political podcasts. well, that may be overstating it a lot, but that's at least the goal. I'm not saying we're there yet, because Norm McDonald's is quite the genius, but you know, that's at least a good thing to aspire to. But we'll keep you posted. And for Maggie Dave and Glenn Keck, we're signing off. And America, keep your eyes open, keep your eyes peeled. A lot of stuff's happening around, but don't get too wound up about it. Just subscribe to the podcast, and we'll gently guide you through in a sort of a vague way. Y'all come back now, you hear?
Yeah.